3 VAs. Ballarat Today.
Now, today we've got some important speakers, including our keynote speaker in Derek McManus. And Derek's standing by, and I've got to admit, first time I read his story, I just thought, what the hell? So now, Derek was a sniper, he was also a diver, and he was also a counter-terrorist operative in the elite SA Police Special Tasks and Rescue Star Group. And now, during a high-risk arrest, he was shot 14 times with a high-powered rifle in less than 5 seconds. Now, just thinking, how did he survive after lying there for 3 hours? Couldn't be rescued for 3 hours until medical help finally came through.
How do you survive that?
Well, we're about to find out. We've got Derek right here. Derek, thanks for joining us on Ballarat Today.
Absolute pleasure to be here. Great talking to you guys. Great to be here with the walk as well. Walking off the wall within is such a great cause, and the ethos behind it, the power behind it, and the community spirit behind it. It's just amazing. So absolute honour to be here.
Walking off the wall within, I believe there's 10 sites in 2020, and it's gone international. It'll be in New Guinea as well.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's certainly growing, that's for sure.
And I'm just going to pick up on what you were saying about the community event before. You know, you can walk the 20Ks or you can walk 100 metres. Here in Ballarat, they've organised it so well that they walk around St. Pat's School Oval, and they do about a 2K loop, but they've done that so that the kids can come, they can walk for a little while, then they can play, then they can come back, and you sort of walk around past your friends again. Mm. And if you want to pick up, it's really, really well organised.
It's an amazing event, so make sure you're part of it. Okay, well, let's go straight into your story. Now, you also teach human durability, but let's go to your line of work, because it was a certainly very high-risk line of work, being a sniper and SA Police Special Tasks and Rescue Group operator. Let's go to the day that you were shot 14 times. Look, we can't understand how you survived something like that. So can you take us back to the day on how it happened?
Yeah, you say it's hard to understand how I survived. The doctors that I've spoken to, the first doctor to get to me and all the doctors treating me, they also don't know how I survived. So it is a story that I think is a little bit surreal. I see it differently to what other people do. I look at it and say, why wouldn't I have survived? That's what I wanted. But on the day, we went to arrest a guy who had a warrant for 197 counts of fraud. Not something you normally associate with violence. It's just fraud. That's theft by trick. But we knew this guy's history. We knew there was a potential for something to go wrong. And so the Star Group were asked to go and do this high-risk arrest. We went there. We were wearing full body armour, flak vests. We call it flak vests. Some people call it bulletproof vests. We went to the front door. We knocked. We called. But there was no answer. However, one of our other snipers was sitting in the bush watching the house. So we knew he should be answering. And we knocked again, but he didn't answer. I went down the side of the house to look to see whether we could make an entry through a sliding door without causing damage or minimising damage, rather than smashing in through, you know, wooden doors. And as I got down the side of the house, he spotted me and he just started shooting straight away. He just opened up. A 7.62, for those people who know rifles. It was a military rifle. It's the same rifle the Chinese use when they go to war. The bullets fired are the same the Chinese use when they go to war. He fired 18 times in less than 5 seconds and hit me 14 times with either bullets or shrapnel. Now, when it happened to me, I actually didn't feel the pain of being shot. I didn't feel any impact. I didn't realise that. I just started falling to the ground and I started cursing myself. You know, how can I be so stupid? But halfway to the ground, I saw small round holes in the glass sliding door. And then I heard the sound of gunfire. As I was falling to the ground, I've actually rationalised to myself that I must be falling because I'm getting shot. And so before I even hit the ground, if you can get your heads around this, before I even hit the ground, I started saying to myself, Derek, don't be too hard on yourself. If you're getting shot, it's quite acceptable to fall over. And that's what was going through my mind.
This must have been going... Everything was in slow motion or something?
Not at that stage. Everything was just... unknown to me at that stage. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm falling and let me analyse it. Once I hit the ground and I was lying on my back, things went into slow motion there. The only two bullets that I can actually remember hit me in my left thigh. And at the time they hit me, time did slow down. It seemed to take 30 seconds for these two bullets to hit me and then time to move on. And it felt like a sledgehammer. The first one felt like a sledgehammer just driving into my thigh. And then I felt a shockwave going up through my body and then back down through my body to the point of impact. And then that second sledgehammer hit. And again, it was that shockwave. So time did slow down during that period. But part of the reason I survived was that I had prepared myself physically, mentally, and emotionally for the job that I was going to do. The choices that I'd made that were putting me in Star Group, the choices that I made that were making me a Star Group sniper, and I trained with the SAS in counter-terrorism.
So just to clarify, Star Group is like the SOGIs, the SOG in Victoria.
The SOGs, Special Operations Group. We are equivalent groups. We are brother-sister groups. And we all train with the SAS at different times, so we are up at that counter-terrorist level. So it was realistic for me to say to myself, as a result of my choices, I may be shot and injured. I may be shot and killed. And I thought it was normal for people to go, well, if there's a chance that I'm going to be shot and injured, well, I should prepare myself for it. And I thought everybody did that, but apparently we don't. It's one of those elephant in the room type conversations. Mm. You know, police carry weapons on our hips because, you know, we may encounter armed offenders. And I've spoken to thousands of police officers in Australia, and I've said, have you had this conversation with your wife, with your husband, with your whoever it might be? And they go, well, no, but we know it's possible, but you haven't had the conversation yet. You actually haven't addressed it. So that was one of the things I did. I call it open, honest, confronting conversations with ourselves about the reality of what we might encounter. Mm. Now, one of those things that I knew I might encounter is if I do get shot, what follows on from that for everybody else in the world, many, many people, is that they do have PTSD, they do have depression, they do have anxieties, they do have nightmares, they do have flashbacks. So I said to myself, that's always going to be a possibility as well. How can I best prepare myself so that that doesn't happen? And so I prepared myself that way, and I think that's one of the reasons that I was able to survive this. I had prepared for it. I didn't go into panic mode.
Worst thing you can do, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And a difficult thing not to do, I guess. It's, that is amazing that you've kept yourself calm in that situation.
Yeah.
The doctors turn up, was it 3 hours later?
3 hours later. So I was lying on the ground for 3 hours, fully conscious for 3 hours, and always monitoring my body, monitoring my panic, monitoring my heart rate, monitoring my breathing.
You're breaking it right down.
Oh, absolutely. But that's part of what we did in Star Group as well. We were taught in different situations how to control panic, how to stay focused on the job that we need to do. And a big part of that was the diving. The diving that I did is equivalent to the clearance divers in the Navy, and you know, people may know the Navy SEALs. It's that style of diving where you may get trapped somewhere, and so you have to slow your whole body system down so that you can make that cylinder of air on your back last as long as possible. And that's what I did while I was on the ground. Absolutely calmed myself so that my heart rate was as low as possible. Now, being physically fit certainly helped me. My resting heart rate at the time was 38. So I was reasonably fit at that time, and that helped me to survive and control my bleeding.
Can I ask how long ago this happened? What's the...
25 years ago now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Now, when the doctors arrived, were you, I guess, still focusing on keeping yourself calm? You didn't sort of let go now that they're taking over, or did you not think of that?
There are some funny stories that come out of something as tragic as this. When the doctors eventually got to me, I was so low on blood that I was passing in and out of consciousness. The first doctor to get to me said he didn't think I was alive because there was no colour, there was no sound, there was no breathing, there was no moving. And then I took this last gasping breath, as he describes it, and then he worked his magic. He and his medical team and my team that were supporting them stood in direct line of fire, bullets whizzing around their ears. And they treated me for 10 minutes, and they got me to the back of the ambulance. And as they were sliding me into the back of the ambulance, my mind has drifted off to, I've got dive training tomorrow, and my senior sergeant is a tyrant. If you don't turn up on time, there is hell to pay.
So
I called over one of my other diving mates over to me and said, Paddo, get over here, get over here. And as you can imagine, his eyes are massive as he comes over. And I said, Paddo, apologise to Jeffo because I may not make dive training tomorrow.
Isn't it funny how the mind works? But the other thing is, there must be a very, very small number of people who have been shot the amount of times that you had and is walking around on this earth today. It must be a handful. Have you met anybody else?
I've met several people, I go seeking them out just to find out how we can swap experiences, not swap stories.
You're not comparing scars, yeah.
No. Well, we probably do, but that's not the purpose. It's that experience. What was going through your mind? How did you handle it? I want to educate myself as much as possible on how people not just manage challenges of shooting. I'm lining up to meet a friend of mine who got PTSD from raising a stepchild, which was extremely traumatic. How did they get through that? How did they get over that? Because all those experiences will educate us on life.
Yeah.
Now, Derek, you travel around teaching human durability, and you're obviously going to talk about your experiences today, but companies will get you along to talk about how we can be more durable, and what's the best way you like to frame things?
So human durability is a phrase I coined myself, I say that human durability is about going beyond resilience. Resilience is the ability to bounce back after things go wrong. I say that human durability is about sustaining optimal performance, and that's about having some idea of what you might encounter and some idea of how you might deal with it.
Being prepared.
Absolutely. It's being prepared, but it's being prepared for the elephant in the room. Let's have that conversation about the big things that might go wrong. Let's not just talk about the comfortable stuff. And I've got a model that I work through to get there. Big part of that model is having open, honest, confronting conversations. And the distinction that I make between resilience and durability is so significant that the School of Psychology at University of South Australia are now giving me students to help me research it. Next year I'll have the honors students, and we're looking at taking the program that I run, and I run it either as a keynote like I'm going to do here, or a half-day program, a full-day program, two-day program, or over a period of 8 weeks or eight fortnights. And it really is about changing people's attitudes to the challenges that we know we possibly could take, but we don't really prepare ourselves for well. We go, oh, there's such a small chance of that happening. Let's just go with it, and if it happens, we'll work it out at the time. Well, I'm sorry, that's sometimes too late. That's the one that destroys your relationship in your marriage, the relationship you have with your employees. It'll destroy your business, or it'll just destroy your confidence. So let's just have that open, honest, confronting conversation about what is the reality and how can we best prepare for it. I say there are two levels of comfort that come out of it. One is, let's have a conversation about that big elephant and go, actually, rather than being nervous about it and not sure how we'll deal with it, if we really look at it and we go, actually, we've got the resources, we've got the finances, we've got the people, we've got the infrastructure, even if that happens, we're going to be all right. Bang, you go forward so much more confidently,
yeah.
You are more likely to have success. The second level of comfort is that, oh my gosh, actually, if that did happen, it will destroy us. Let's comfortably, confidently step back from it.
Yeah.
And go and build ourselves so that we've got the resources to come back and do it later.
So calculated risks in a way.
Absolutely. I say several times.
Realistic risks.
Yeah, absolutely. I say several times in my presentations that I do a lot of risky things in my life, but I don't see myself as a risk taker. I see myself as a risk manager. Mm. And it is calculated risks. We can enjoy these things.
Derek, I could sit here for the next 2 hours talking to you because you've got some very fascinating things to say. Now, maybe you're out there and you're a boss, part of a community group, sporting organisation. If you want to get in contact with Derek, basically his website is derekmcmanus.com. Is that right?
Correct. So,
yeah.
And Derek, D-E-R-R-I-C-K, a little bit of an unusual spelling. Now, Derek is, actually, very quickly?
Yeah, okay, very quickly. Yeah, Derek is obviously the name my parents gave to me and they wanted to spell it differently. But the Derek spelt that way is actually a portable crane. And so, you know, I don't know whether it beggars truth or not, but the name Derek is supposed to reflect leadership and strength. And I think that's because it's part of that portable crane thing. But it's D-E-R-R-I-C-K. mcmanus.com.
All right, we'll put those links up on our website. We'll put this interview on the website at 3ba.com.au and we'll do that hopefully this afternoon, or if not, across the weekend. Derek, a real pleasure to meet you and can't wait to hear you speak at the Walk Off the Wall launch.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here with you and an honour to be here to talk at the launch.
Derek McManus on Ballarat Today. It's 3BA 102.3. When was